Bones.
Hanging out here with Jeremy and Justin.
There we go. There we go.
Yeah, these are my West Coast hang down all time throw down pals.
All right. You well, you good to go, Sonny?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll.
All right, man.
Let's bring it. What the heck? Okay.
All right. I'm ready when you're ready, Mr. Jeremy.
Yeah.
This is Justin Maurer here on Skid Row Radio, and we are honored to host Mr. Kenneth Sonny Donato. Now, Sonny was 15 when he met Jack Kerouac at Murphy's Bar in his hometown of Northport, Long Island in 1964. And later, he hitchhiked and jumped boxcars across America. At the end of the rainbow in Hollywood, California, Doug Weston hired him to tend bar at the Troubadour, where he hosted musician barflies such as Tom Waits, David Lee Roth, and members of Motley Crue.
Yeah, Diamond Dave.
Nights off, he drank and traded poetry with Charles Bukowski at the No Name Bar on Yucca and Vine. Kenneth Sonny Donato lives in Hollywood, and he's here with us in downtown Los Angeles. Hello, Sonny. Thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, Justin, man. I appreciate it, man. It was a great game of pool we shot, man. That really loosened me up.
That's good. I thought you were hustling me for a second, but then I was glad when we didn't place any bets.
I PTP. I play to play. You know what I mean?
First off, where did the idea for Poet's Guide come about, and how long did it take you to get this collection of poetry together?
Well, yeah, like everything else happens when nothing else is happening, I suppose. But what we did with Bukowski up there at the No Name Bar, I called it that because it had a rusty end over the door with a shadow, so it almost looked like two ends. So it was like the No Name Bar. And Bukowski and I would, we shot pool in there in the beginning. And then I left my radio there one night in the rain, and I turned around to my friend Butch, and I said, "Hey, man, I'm going back for my radio." He goes, "I ain't going back there." I went, "What the fuck? I'm going back there." So I went back, and Bukowski, I heard this pounding on the door, and I'm pounding on the door, and the bar is closed. So I'm like, man, it's raining. It's like November. It's a Tuesday night. There's nothing going on. And then I hear this music coming from the alleyway, and I think, my radio. So I turn around the corner there, and there's Bukowski, this Polish poet. That's what the world needs, man. I turn around, I see Bukowski there in the rain, in the shadows, in the hallway. He's got my radio. I said, "Hey, man, I came back from my radio." And he says, "It's my radio now, kid." Like that. And I was like, what's that mean? So I figure I'm going to scare this old dude. I was young. I was 25 then. So I pull out a switchblade and I go, "I want my radio, man." And he goes, "Hey, put the toothpick away, kid. I will kill you." Just like that. He kept smiling. I figured, uh-oh. Oh, man. I just put my knife away and said, "All right, man." He goes, "I'm just kidding you, man. You drink or what?" So we had drinks in the rain like at 2 o'clock in the morning, probably 2:30, Yeah. So
well, good, man. Well, I guess you got my my next question there. The first poem in Sonny Donato's book, A Poet's Guide to the Bars, about the old school haunts of Hollywood, where Sonny Donato has made his home for the last 30 years or so. The first poem is about this legendary almost knife fight with Charles Bukowski in the alley behind the No Name Bar. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
This is the first poem from A Poet's Guide to the Bars by Kenneth Sonny Donato.
Yeah, it comes out of the book, and it's just a no-name bar. Bartenders are dueling. They deal through the night. Who cares if you're tired or lonely or old? Two shots in the night. First you're bought, then you're sold. That's lonely, last call. Who thought up that verse? Is that car a taxi? It looms like a hearse. I once drank with Chuck. It's Charles to you. With busted up knuckles, Bukowski, it's true. He once saved my life. Accident? Maybe not. It happened on Yucca. Don't bother to look. Scarred, bearded face, hands that shook. That was a good bar, the one with no name. He stood there alone, alone in the hall. The only truth there came from his eyes. I swear I was there. I reached for my knife, not sure, unaware. He offered his drink, his last solitude, ice melting. Blood brothers that drank hard with nothing in sight, just guys counting dreams, comrades in the night. Yeah, that's out of the book, A Poet's Guide to the Bars. That's the first poem, and it's called No Name Bar.
Thank you very much for that. Really enjoyed it. You dedicated the book to Harry Dean Stanton and Mario Magliari. Is that how you say his name? Explain who they are and your relationship to these two.
That's a good one, man. Harry Dean, Dino, you know? Like, he's a guy, he's a total inspiration, and he's the most honest guy that I know. And, you know, he just doesn't lie, and that way he doesn't have to lie about it. He's just a real straightforward person. He's always supported me. He's like a real inspiration to me. That's Harry Dean Stanton. Over on the west side, we call him Dino. You know, that's our nickname for him. You know, and sometimes we say, hey, man, we were young and crazy, but now we're old and stupid. You know, but we're just kidding around. But I guess he's had a great career. I got to tell you something, man. When he sings a song, he sang it in Cool Hand Luke. And the song is Take a Closer Walk with Me. And that song is a religious gospel song. And when he sings it, it doesn't matter where, doesn't matter why or when. Whenever he sings it, man, time stops. It's the most beautiful song, you know. So I just wanted to put that in there. That's why I dedicated this book, Poet's Guide to the Bars, to Harry Dean Stanton and the Pope of the Sunset Strip. That'd be Mario. Anybody that's been up on the Rainbow or the Roxy or the Whiskey, and that spans like 40 years, they just had their anniversary, knows Mario, man. He's a great guy, and he makes everybody feel like they're at home. That's why I dedicated this book to Mario and Harry Dean, Dino.
Right on. When you came out here originally in the 70s, you got a job working at Doug Weston's Troubadour.
Yeah.
And tell us the story how you got hired there and who were some of your favorite acts who performed and drank there? Who was your best customer and who was your worst customer?
Well, I can tell you right now who outdrank everybody was Joe Cocker, period. No doubt about it. And, you know, and that was just led, you know, whatever. He was great. But we all, listen, when you hitchhike 30,000 miles, I did, you know, and like, it's not like I had my own stories. I brought something to the party. So when any of these writers, I mean Tommy Waits, Ricky Lee, Gene Clark, he had a band called The Birds. And when these guys start with their stories, you know, about storytelling, man, I'd bust in with some of my hitchhiking stories about the Eagle and the Seven Deaths and the sign of the Phoenix and all of this, the ultimate sign in Scorpio. And, you know, I got to tell you, I had stories that were like, I brought it, like I brought something to the party. So, you know, it united us all as friends, you know what I mean? And let's see, you know, Diamond Dave, like there's a cat right there, David Lee Roth. We were friends before Van Halen. In 1974 in Pasadena, we used to ride our bicycles out to Lacey Park and Huntington Library on Tuesdays because it was free on Tuesdays, you know what I mean? So we'd ride out there and we'd talk to the Greek gods about what we wanted out of life, you know? And then Dave, you know, I could tell you about 16 funny David Lee stories, but, you know, they're all there at the Troubadour. Vince Neil came in. But, you know, in the beginning, it was three broken bar stools and a bunch of people that didn't make it out of the 60s. Guys like Tim Hardin, man. Great American songwriters. And that place was a haven for American songwriters. Because why? Because of Weston, the owner. He was friendly, and he had a conspiratorial smile. And he was inviting to real creative people. They were allowed to hang out there and allowed to play musical instruments anytime, anywhere, for any reason. And they really loved it. And, I mean, it was, at that time, it was just a family of writers, singers, drinkers, jokesters, jazz players, comedians. I don't know what they were, but everybody was really at home in the front bar of the Troubadour, you know?
So how many years did you end up working at the Troubadour?
Well, yeah, it's funny, end up. I really didn't end up there, but yeah, I guess the highway kind of ended. But you know what? I got to tell you, I was hired there in 77 after my 2 or 3 years at the Starwood. I don't know if anybody remembers the Starwood.
There was a lot of punk rock shows in around that time.
Yeah, that was a serious club up in Hollywood. It's still rated the number two club in Hollywood. So I was brought by a manager that we hired when the Troubadour was closed, and he brought me to the West Side. And I walked into the bar and I went, what did I just do, man? There was like three broken bar stools and a bunch of drunks left over from the 60s, you know? And I thought, why did I come here? And then on Monday night, every Monday night. First, it would be like Joni Mitchell would walk in, and then Ricky would sit behind the bar. She'd go, you know, Sonny, it's Monday night. It was really wild times for us. And I got to tell you, you know, the deal with that was that for that one night, the Troubadour was as it always was. I mean, first Gene Clark would walk in with his black on his guitar, and then Joni, and they'd start singing Mr. Tambourine Man. And I mean, you know, man. So we as employees, we would wait all week for Monday night because we knew on Monday night we'd be able to hang out with, I guess, L.A.'s or some of the world's greatest songwriters. And Tommy waits, man, every night, man, at 1:48, the phone ring. Sonny, man, I'm on my way. How do I get there from Washington Boulevard? I go, you know what, Tommy? At this hour, you don't get here. There is no way from there to here. And he'd go, I'll be there, man. I'll put in my order now. You can't say I didn't put my order in. You know, sure enough, a cab would pull up about 2:12 in the morning. Bang, 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 bang. Sonny Bones, open the door, man. So, you know,
Did Tom Waits actually give you your nickname, Sonny?
Yeah. He started that thing. We were all watching Dog Day Afternoon. As a matter of fact, we would meet at Duke's Tropicana with Chucky Weiss and Ricky Lee and Tom Waits and Johnny Sanborn. And I could just go on. Paul Bodie. These were like L.A. cats that were just, it. You know what? It didn't matter if they like made it like big time famous or not. They were like, I would just hang with them no matter what. We had 6 cents or $6,000. It didn't matter, man. We were always happy. You know, so we'd always meet at Duke's Tropicana by that ice-cold milk machine and lean up against it with our faces and stuff. We were all hungover and everything. It was always hot out here in L.A. Yeah.
Well, read us another poem. Maybe you mentioned that Bordner's is one of your favorite bars. I understand you have a poem about Bordner's in A Poet's Guide.
You know what? There's like 63 poems in here. I've got to kind of find it. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's all right. Just look for the photo. Bordner's, of course, is over on, is it Las Palmas or Cherokee?
No, it's, it is Cherokee, and it's right below Musso and Frank's. It's,
That's right, right around the corner from Maselli's, which must be on Las Palmas.
Yeah, it was one of Bukowski's favorite bars, you know. It's just got this feeling, you know. It's like called the grainy blue denim truth, man. When you hang out in a place like that, it just feels honest. I don't know. Mm. Yeah, you just feel comfortable. It's like I say, you don't go to Bordner's, you arrive there. You got to help me find this poem. I might even have to look it up. You know, I don't always sit around and read my own poetry. You know what I mean? You know, jeez. Anyway, I'm glad, glad you're dressed the way you are. You people out there in the radio land, you can't see Justin right now, but he's rocking like this hard leather jacket with a blue shirt on. We just shot pool on the way here, man, and it really brought me back. You know, shooting pool for some reason just, you know, rocks my gypsy soul. I got to tell you that. Okay. Man, you're going to have to find. Okay, I got it. It's page 83. Excuse me, out there, radio land.
And Sonny, by the way, you placed third in the Tampa Bay pool competition. What was that story about?
Yeah, you weren't supposed to tell people because I can't get the drop on them anymore. You know what I mean? All right, you know, Casablanca's. I haven't read this poem in quite a while. Watch out where you sit. Some guy spilled his beer. It's piled up ashtrays. Heroes and sneers. Switch hitting women with shiny black hair. An off-duty cop. They make up this lair. Perfume in the bathroom. An angry old matron. Things that you find in any bus station. The broke and the weary, the hip and the cool. They pose and they drink, some even shoot pool. A town with no heart, just fortune and fame. A thousand of those whose life is a game. A bar of distinction, just look distinction. Look at its face, all frayed and battered. It's fun and it's drama, it's life, it's forlorn. The joke of the game, it soon becomes clear that drinking just stuffs the crams all your fear. Like Bogey and Lauren, the bells they will toll. Although we've heard many a chilling last call. Yeah.
I like that. That's good. Bogey and Lauren, apparently, they used to sneak off and they would park on Selma. And I actually got a ticket on Selma the other day for a failure for a complete stop. At
yeah,
the
was
stop
that
Sunday.
You, man? I saw that flashing red light.
It was me and the little blue rice rocket and the motorcycle cop. He got me.
Oh, did
in
he?
In a school
get,
zone.
I saw
right
that, man.
Selma.
You know, whenever that happens and I see someone else pulled over, I think, you got the wrong guy.
But apparently, Bogey and Bacall would park their cars there and then she would jump into his car and then they'd kiss and whatnot, because Selma at the time was a remote location for their illicit love affair because he was still married.
You know, there's something to that, because Bordner's had a back door and they had a parking lot back there. And I believe that a lot of people of fame would just park in the back and go in and out so nobody saw them actually go in and out, you know, in the front, especially people from Musso and Frank's. That was another place close by. You know, if you look outside of Bordner's, man, they got that old wrought iron, you know, semicircular wall on the wall, and, you know, the dust rolls in. I mean, you know, at night the fog rolls in and the lights grow dim. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's just enchanted.
It really is.
You know, yeah, it is.
That sign and everything right there.
Signs there and the shadows.
You feel the history.
Along.
The yeah. ghosts are walking around. Yeah.
That's true, yeah. And same with Venice on Tuesdays. For some reason, it's either Tuesday late at night in Hollywood or Tuesday afternoon in Venice when the seagulls really don't have anywhere to go. And, they can actually land on the walkway and, you know, and everybody, it just stops. It's like a still life, maybe even like a pastel watercolor down there. I wrote my first poem down there. It's the last poem in my book. And I wrote it verbatim, and I've never changed a word.
John Thomas. Did you know John Thomas?
I don't know, unless I shot pool with him. I knew a lot of gypsies and a lot of, down at the Circle
Bar. Let's hear it. If you're inspired to read the Venice poem, let's hear it.
Well, the Venice poem was very stark. I don't know if, I find it really stark. But I liked it because it came from someplace, you know. Maybe someplace a lot of people don't go. But street lights and late nights, they all start to wane like tired traffic signals. They just don't feel pain. You know, it wasn't too late, let's say, just after dark. I heard the two shots ring out in the night, and I turned to see Jimmy run out of the park. The screams, they grew louder as time ticked his tomb. The spring of his life, it was too much, man, too soon. Your soul starts to stagger. Life takes a swoon. Hey, Jimmy, you kidding? You jiving or what? You shot that poor man, and what do you got? We open the wallet and rain in the dark, just pictures of daughters, a wife with a heart. Hey, Jimmy, you did him. When you ended his life, when you pulled that trigger, you stepped on a dream. The rain, it keeps pouring, a cadence in time. Street lights and late nights, they all start to wane like tired traffic signals. They just don't feel pain. Yeah. Well, that was, you know, that poem was just, I don't know where that came from, because it just came, you know?
Well, out of all the bars in Poet's Guide, the ones that aren't around, which one do you miss the most?
Oh, wait a minute. The ones that aren't around or the ones that changed their names?
Well, either or.
You know, I got to tell you, let's see, which ones aren't around? Actually, most of them are around. I'd have to think of one that isn't. Oh, I guess maybe, I never really liked Fellini's anyway. They had this real long mirror, and if there was 12 people, it looked like there was 412 in there. You know, and I have severe claustrophobia anyway, so every time I walked in there, I was like, man, there's too many people, but it was really this big smoky mirror, you know, so...
It seems like Dantana's in the Rainbow. Are those your hangouts right now?
Yeah, those are West Side hangouts, and, of course, where the Troubadour is, which is nearby. Dantana's is really the last pirate ship. You cannot get better food on a consistent basis. It's lovely. It's great. It's, you know, got character. It's wonderful. Yeah, and the Rainbow, man, if you go up to the Rainbow, I got to tell you, you could be wearing anything and feel at home in the Rainbow. And nobody makes you move. You get a table, it's your table till you want to leave, and it's great. And I mean, you know, the food is, you don't leave there hungry, you know, let's put it that way.
You had a stroke, as I understand, a couple of years ago. How did that affect your writing, and how has that an impact on your life.
Yeah, well, I think, like, I felt like I got improved. It was like most people have a stroke and they're like decreased. It kind of increased me because it eliminated the fear. I knew something was going on. So once I found out what it was like, hey, man, that's cool. Let's move on with it, you know? Like in life, I think of what I can do, not what I can't do. Mm. And I think about what I have, not what I don't have.
Right.
So, you know, I wake up in the morning, man, and I have really good friends, and I have a really good feeling. That's what I think about. It's what I have. You know, I feel like it's my first day in town, you know? Each time when I wake up, it's like your first day in town. Think about, yeah, well, you have a car. Well, where'd that come from? Hey, don't question it, you know? So, you know, hey, you know, you got a nice apartment. Hey, wow, that's great, you know? And look at these friends you have. Oh, yeah, you know, it's like wherever I go, if I have that attitude, then I have friends. Because that's what I have, you know? And why think about what you don't have? I mean, well, that's a great way. Hey, I know, let's start Monday off, you know? And I feel like midnight is the start of every day, and Monday is the start of every week. So I just look at that day, it clicks, brand new day, brand new week, you know?
And you live underneath the H in the Hollywood sign?
No, man, I live under the D.
Under the D?
Yeah.
Which canyon is that?
Maybe you live under the H.
No. I do not.
It's funny when you're coming up north on any street and you look up at the D. I actually do live under the D. And I tell people, you ever see how it's moving away from the other letters? That's me, man. Like, you know, I'm up there at 3:12 in the morning and I'm moving that thing, but just a little bit each night, you know what I mean?
As much strength as you can muster.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I just kind of lean on it, it moves. But the D, yeah, that's Bronson Canyon, you know. Mm.
Where
yeah.
they found the decapitated fella. No, yeah, that was...
You know, the funny thing is the lady said, well, we found a decapitated, a severed head. And I said, lady, you really don't have to use the word severed when you find a head. You know? So, yeah, she was a newscaster. She looked at me with big wide eyes and goes, I'm going on air. I'll talk to you in a minute. I was like,
but I guess the dogs, there was these two women apparently walking dogs, and one of the dogs found this plastic bag.
Who told you that?
That had the head, and the dog tore open the bag. That's how the women found the head.
Yeah. Well, you remember thinking that I'm like an apocalypse now, and believe me, I don't watch movies unless I can spell them. So I'm still trying to figure out how to get.
You haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, no, I talked to I talked to this guy named Frank that had a newspaper. It turned out to be Frank Coppola one night over at Tana's, and he wanted to talk to me because I said to him, I don't see movies I can't spell. You understand? So he wanted to, he said, good, you're just the person I want to talk to.
Have you seen Rumblefish, he asked you.
yeah, right. Rumblefish, that's like, you know, jumbo shrimp. You know what, if you say a word like rumblefish, and you got to envision a bunch of fish duking it out in a, you know, in a neighborhood park, you know, over a turf war with fish or something, the rumblefish. Was that a movie?
Yeah, it's probably a good rundown of the plot, actually.
You better watch out. I might start interviewing you.
No, hey, it's all right.
It's like in The Godfather. Hey, watch out, we don't shoot you.
Well, it's all right. The directors aren't poets, then they can't hustle the pool game like you can.
Oh, man, quit telling people. I'm supposed to creep up on people. I'm the guy with the stroke.
No, it's all right. No, nobody knows. He can't shoot pool anymore.
Yeah, that's it, right.
All right, man. Well, you're reading with Dan Fonte and some other LA writers in about a week or so. What are your expectations of the event? What do you think about the young kids and their kind of romanticizing the Los Angeles of the past you were a full-fledged member of?
Yeah, I don't have any. You know, expectations are like the groundwork for being disappointed, man. I'm fortunate to read with Dan Fonte. He's a Los Angeles literary legend. His family is legendary. It's an honor to be reading with Dan Fonte. Myself, I'm the author of A Poet's Guide to the Bars, okay? And we get to read with the brightest ascending young writers in L.A. at the Last Bookstore, Sunday, May 13th, man. It's going to be an all-day affair, and it's going to be, you know, like, come on, literary Los Angeles, show me what you got. Let's go, you know? And I like that.
A call to arms. I like that.
It's true, you know. Bring them on, man. Because I got to tell you, all of these writers, it's just really, really going to be brilliant and bright. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. May 13th. What is the lab? Have you been to the lab? You've been down.
Oh, yeah. We can go check it out after this if you want.
Yeah. I just heard it was like a family. I don't know.
Really nice place. Really good. Nice vibe in
That's
there.
What I get. Staff. I get that from City Lights in San Fran, and where a cat falls asleep in your lap. You know, the owner has a cat and it sleeps in your lap. And if that happens, I guess you're a good writer. I don't know. You know, I hope that's what it means. You know?
The kiss of death from the cat.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been really a riot. I hope everybody out there, I hope you guys can come on down to this Down and Sound Lit Fest, old school L.A., man.
Why don't you close us out, Mr. Sonny Bones? Or any advice for some young writers before you close us out with one of your poems? You can read one of your newer poems or one of your older poems.
Yeah, I'll tell you
whatever
what,
inspires
man.
You.
I really don't. You know, the advice thing is like life is like a hockey game. You're going to get knocked down. Everybody gets knocked down. The question is, how fast are you going to get up? Mm. You know? I mean, because you got to get back up. So, you know, whatever it is in life, man, for anybody, writer, pool shooter, you know, bartender, bricklayer, man, you know, whenever life knocks you down, that's my advice. Get back up, you know, because if you take too long, you might like it down there, you know? Mm. So that's, I don't really have any advice for any young writers, man. When I was a young writer, I thought, man, drink as much as you can, meet as many people as you can. And, you know, people say, what do you do? And I go, as much as I can, you know, because you're just going to kick around. Like, you're gonna kick out your jams once, man. You may as well make it count, you know?
I like that. Well, you want to close this out with a poem, one of your new ones, one of your old ones, whatever
inspired
to read.
Yeah, I'll just do like a Booze and Do's, and it's in the Poet's Guide to the Bars. Booze and Do's, 12-string guitars, cigars, Kerouac guiding, Cassidy trying. A bartender dazed, infused with rage. Neon street, city streets, taxi cabin, midnight stabbing, death bars of bourbon drenched, broken down stench, lights up the night. Motorcycles, hot dog stands, hands, pretzel vendors, mortals dropping like goddamn flies in summer's madness. A neon juke becomes a best friend. Booze and Do's in the heat of the night. You know, and I have one poem here that's when you look in someone's eyes and they're really deep, you know, and you just love looking in those eyes. It's like eyes like that cold castle we'd visit as children with the old well out back. We'd separate the wood over the well, then drop a coin and listen and wait. Then wait some more and turn to leave and laugh, while in the background we'd hear a faint but certain tiny splash. Mm. Eyes like two Cadillacs coming through the Midtown Tunnel. You know, those are those are the kind of people I like hanging with. When you look at them and they're looking back at you, and all of a sudden, it's like you're the only two people in the world, you know?
Well, Jack Kerouac, you know, he would talk about the people he liked hanging out with, you know, the mad people who exploded like fireworks in the night. And you had one of your first drinks, as I understand, with Jack Kerouac. And what are your memories of having that drink in Long Island with Jackie Kerouac?
I can tell you this. It wasn't my first drink, actually. We shot pool in Murphy's Bar on the North Shore of Long Island, where I was born. And you know who hung out in these bars? Characters. There was a rotten spot. This woman was a big birthmark. We nicknamed everybody Tugboat Scotty, Walkie Talkie, and the Dark-Eyed Man. The Dark-Eyed Man, his name was Jack. And he just wore sunglasses all the time. And they all drank shots, these little shots with these little six-ounce beers. And they were all really, you know, really proper kind of for a while until, like, after 2 hours of drinking, you know, their characters would change. Well, the Dark-Eyed Man, I said to the bartender, hey, Jack's cool. What's his name? You remember, I'm 15 and I'm hanging out in the bar. And he goes, oh, Jack, that's Jack the Rider. So we used to call him Mr. the Rider. So, like, after a year of calling him Mr. DeRider, he made a great shot at him. I go, nice shot, Mr. DeRider. He goes, Sonny, what is this Mr. DeRider crap? And I go, well, the bartender said you were Jack the Rider. And he goes, no, Jack the Rider, okay? Meaning not the writer, okay? So, but I said, oh, so you want us to call you Jack the Rider now? And he went, nah, Sonny, I like it like the way it is, you know? You know, my name is Kenny back then, to be honest with you. He goes, no, Kenny, you guys just keep calling me Mr. DeRider. It's okay. You know, so we did. So that was it. And a long time after that, so, you know, he passed away. And someone said, remember that guy, Jack? Yeah. And we go, yeah, what happened to him? Well, you know, he's not around anymore, but you know who he was, right? And we go, no, you know, we heard he was a writer. And they said, yeah, well, you know, he wrote this book. You ought to read it sometime. I waited until 1999 to read it. You know why? Because I read it. When I read it in his voice, in your head. When you read alone, you read in different voices, I hope. And I read it in his voice, and that was really cool. It was like he was talking to me again. I really liked that. Mm. Yeah.
Wow, great to hear. Jack DeRider. I really like that story.
Yeah, that was really something.
Well, but, let's close this out. This is Sonny Bones, Kenneth Sonny Donato. And we're here on Skid Row Radio, thanks to Jeremy and his friend from San Francisco. And
hey, Jeremy.
Sonny Donato, of course, is reading with Dan Fonte, Gabe Hart, myself, and eight now, unsung L.A. poets at the Last Bookstore on May 13th. And Sonny Bones is going to close us out with a new poem he has. I see A Travel Song of the Wild as the first few lines. We're very honored to have you, Sonny Donato. Thank you for joining us on Skid Row Radio. And let's hear this new poem.
Yeah, it's actually just a fragment of a poem that I had started. It's a travel song in the wild, child's dream, answered in red clay dawns of peaceful mornings where pain don't know color. I saw roses drooped in rain, eyes that told stories, hunger and the things you never knew. You know, and that's just really just a part of a poem. I would have to find the poem in the book. It's all out of A Poet's Guide to the Bars, that whole idea, you know, about the poems, writing poems about bars. That was a Bukowski idea when we traded napkins with silly poems about what the bartender might wear, you know, what you might hear, you know, how you get in, how you get out. That was the idea.
Thank you. This is Justin Maurer on Skid Row Radio. We've been very honored to host Kenneth Sonny Donato, who was a contemporary of Charles Bukowski, and he has recently released A Poet's Guide to the Bars, which is an ode in poetry to some of the greatest Hollywood haunts, because, of course, Kenneth has been a Hollywood poet for over 30 years now and running strong. And thank you so much, Sonny. Really appreciate you coming down.
That was great, Justin. Thanks.